Tobias, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dries. It's an honor to be on the WAU Founder Podcast, my former alma mater where I graduated in 2007.
Okay, it's already some time ago. So great to have you back, I would say. As you might know, we always start in the same way in the podcast. So we always want to give floor to our guests to tell something about their personal background, where they're coming from. So I would say the floor is yours.
Thank you. So after my graduation, I jumped straight into investment banking, where I essentially stayed for 7 years. And I was not so much on the M&A side, but on sales and trading, equity sales. That's what I did for those 7 years, starting at Goldman Sachs, and later moved on to UBS. And this was obviously a very exciting time in terms of macro economy and dealing in the capital markets. I switched from European equities later on to Asian equities, where there are certainly more inefficiencies and where you probably need a lot more advisory. So I was advising institutional portfolio managers on their equity investment decisions. After a while, I realized, though, that this business is generally under pressure already from new technologies like portfolio trading and more electronic execution without the need to pay or the willingness to pay for the advisory part. And therefore, in 2014, I decided to move back to Germany and become more entrepreneurial. And this was really also the first chance in my view, as this was one of the first fintech incubators in Germany that I joined back then, FinLeap, founded by Jan Beckers. And there I co-founded the first FinLeap venture called Savino, a fixed term deposit marketplace, which later was sold to Spilot and eventually Raisin, which, funny enough, currently resides in the same address that Fest. So basically came full loop there. And since 2014, I have already been building fintechs and startups in Berlin. And of course, the past more than 5 years already building up Fest.
Okay. And so nowadays, you're managing director and CFO as Upfest. Can you explain a bit why you kind of co-founded this company? What was the kind of underlying reasoning there?
So in 2018, I noticed that blockchain might become the first technology really changing the capital markets. And, you know, Upfest was started as a pure crypto or blockchain player, and I really wanted to join a company where this blockchain piece played a role, because again, I saw a small revolution going on in the finance area, just like before my move from traditional investment banking to the fintech world. And we were one of the first offering a blockchain infrastructure as a German company. And this was just very exciting at the time. And then, of course, we developed this model over time from just offering a wallet API to then also include traditional securities and offer a full, what we nowadays call investment API, including traditional equities, ETFs, and also additional instruments in the future.
Yes, because when I looked at the website, so it mentions this investment API. That's actually what you guys are offering now. Can you maybe explain to our audience that might not be that much into fintech and definitely not in B2B what that exactly means, offering an investment API?
For sure. It's also a new term, so I even should include it. Explain it for fintech experts, probably.
Okay.
What it means is by using our API, we enable any business to offer securities to their end users. So it's essentially like a white label securities trading firm. let's say, Dries, you have a blog writing about certain stocks. We could then enable you within technically a few weeks to also offer the buying and selling of these stocks to your end users. And we can do this with not only stocks, but also with crypto, ETFs, and any other asset class in any country in Europe.
Okay.
So that's the short way to think about it. Very similar to maybe what Solaris is doing on the cash side. It's a white label banking solution.
Yeah, and so can you maybe then also illustrate that with a specific use case? But because I saw on LinkedIn, you mentioned that, for instance, a company like Raisin is one of your customers. So can you maybe explain a bit how they use your API to, in the end, kind of deliver products to their customers?
Of course. So our three biggest clients at the moment are Revolut, Raisin, as you mentioned, and N26. And maybe we take the N26 example, as it's very easy to understand, and people probably have an N26 account. And here, basically, N26 was looking to offer securities. So far, they have offered all sorts of cash products and adjacent products around that, but no trading yet. And with Upvest, they can now offer the buying and selling of stocks, ETFs, across the board. So you can basically find us in their app, obviously white labeled. It's mostly under the N26 logo and UX. So the whole UX, we are fully integrated into their UX. So you won't really feel it unless you maybe read the fine print, which is the terms and conditions from Upvest Securities GmbH that you have to accept there. But it's really smoothly integrated there, so they can offer the full suite of trading. And why are they using someone external for this, like Upvest? Of course, the whole trading piece and securities infrastructure is relatively complicated. So we have more than 150 employees dealing with these complexities, especially on the regulated side. So we are a fully regulated investment firm and also a regulated crypto custodian. But then you also need a certain level, of course, of product managers and engineers to build this type of API with probably around 100 movements that you need to be able to make if you want to deal with securities.
Okay, but and that also means, I would think, that in this kind of business, so you're actually kind of a B2B fintech. So I would think that kind of having a lot of trust between you and your customers is very important. Huh? They need to be able to trust that your solution is working, that their customers will be able to kind of seamlessly use your product. And of course, the financial industry in general, I think, is an industry where trust is very important. Can you maybe explain a bit on how you try to make sure that your customers have sufficient trust?
Certainly. So you're completely right. They rely on us for a major piece of their business and probably also revenues at some point. So indeed, the trust level needs to be very high. That's why we have built everything here in Berlin, in Germany, fully regulated by BaFin and Bundesbank, which are our financial regulators here. And of course, we also have this minimum size that you need. We have around 80 engineers and overall more than 150 people, as I said, split out in certain thematic teams or tribes, as we call them, so that we are able to develop features in parallel. And we are trying to be very transparent. So you can see, for example, our API documentation is public. And that's how we try to establish the trust. And of course, by being fully regulated by BaFin, our clients have a certain level of security. So they know that we have been checked inside out. Our people are being monitored, actively monitored by these two regulators. And in addition, we are obviously trying to get certain certifications. Right now, we recently received the ISAE certification, which is an important industry certification that shows that you're doing the necessary controls within your business. And of course, we are also being audited by both internal and external auditors, which gives additional trust to our clients. And in the end, I mean, we also, of course, have personal relationships with many of our clients. They have known us in some cases for several years. I mean, Raisin, for example, was also founded by VAU alumnus. And this gives additional trust, I assume.
And so, because you're mentioning now quite often the word regulation, and of course, financial industry is a heavily regulated industry. At the same time, you're a very fast-growing company. And that seems for me quite a challenge to combine. On the one hand, you want to grow fast, but at the same time, you have to kind of make sure that you're compliant. I think that also means that this kind of famous kind of approach of move fast and break things does not really work out in your industry. So how do you combine these two things? How do you make sure that you can grow fast and at the same time make sure that you grow in a kind of compliant way that meets all the regulatory requirements that you're facing?
You're totally right. We can certainly not afford to break things, because once you break things, you are probably on the radar of the regulators, and they might even restrict your business anywhere in Europe. So that's indeed not our approach as a B2B2C solution. We rely heavily, as you said, on our professional reputation. And there's two challenges here. So one is purely on the technical side. Since we are B2B, we have to be able to handle the scale of millions of N26 or Raisin end users almost immediately. So there's no warm-up period really for us. So that's one challenge, and we are trying to solve that by, for example, implementing everything on Google Cloud, by automizing all operational processes, and therefore we can handle thousands of transactions, securities transactions for that matter, per day without, you know, requiring insanely high amounts of operation staff. And in addition, of course, we have pre-staffed our business probably a bit more than you would staff a usual non-fintech startup. So our compliance, legal, and risk team already has around 15 highly specialized experts. And this is something we already had before we got the licenses in March 2022. So meaning you have to front load certain investments. There's around 80 million euros already that went into our business. And this is simply something you have to do in this regulated area to be able to then handle the load. And of course, if we come to the software side of things, we have set up our own core banking software system. And here it's very important that we actively work with auditors and regulators to explain them the processes, because of course we don't get any startup bonus or tech bonus. The banking regulations have in some cases been written probably 50 years or more ago, and we have to adjust our processes in a way that we still fulfill the spirit of these regulations, but on the other hand, for example, enable to deploy multiple times a day in our software development lifecycle, which is something that every modern developer certainly expects and every modern client.
Yeah, and so that also means that it's quite capital intensive to do that, not? You need, like you said, a lot of upfront investment, maybe hire a bit more people than a traditional startup. So is that also why you are kind of having quite some VC money involved?
That's right. So we are backed by some of the most successful VCs in Europe and also in the US. So we have Bessemer Venture Partners from New York. And also in Germany, we have the two biggest German VCs, Early Bird and Spring ventures, or HV Capital, as they're called these days. And then we have several additional investors, such as Speed Invest, Partech from France and Austria. So it's indeed a well-capitalized startup. I wouldn't say it's capital intensive forever. It's really more about the front loading part. So once you are at 150, 200 people, it will scale very nicely after that without, let's say, constantly adding this type of capital. Of course, you then have also certain minimum capital requirements in the future if you're trading with securities. And we also have a prop trading license, which means we need to maintain certain security levels, again, due to the regulation piece. But this is all not too bad compared to other startup models, I would say. So I think the whole beauty is, once you have your system running and your process is automated, then you can really handle multiple millions of end users. And that's also clearly our goal.
Okay. And I'm also interested in kind of hearing about what kind of culture you try to establish in your company, because as mentioned, so it's of course a startup that wants to grow fast, that indeed wants to reach these millions of users to reap the benefits of the investments. And at the same time, you need to be very careful. You're dealing with conservative, maybe sometimes even outdated regulation that is not really kind of tailored towards digitalization. So I suppose your employees need to be very aware of that kind of things. So how do you kind of try to build a company culture that allows to combine these aspects?
That's a very good question. So indeed, we are trying to maintain an audit standard at all times, right? We always need to be ready for the next audit, be it by our clients or by the actual auditors or by the regulators themselves. At the same time, of course, we don't want to lose this innovative spirit, and we always try to think from the UX, from the end user side of things. We never start with the regulation first. We always start with the end user. We try to put ourselves in their shoes and then make the regulation work for them and therefore also for our B2B clients, and not the other way around. So we really try to always use the latest tech available. And then, as I said, build the regulatory pieces around that. So we very much see ourselves as a traditional SaaS software company, if you like, and not so much as a bank. We always try to keep this software spirit alive and not, let's say, go too much into this investment firm or bank direction all the time from a mental point of view.
Okay. And does that also mean that when you hire people that you are looking for a kind of specific mindset, or is it more that you try to then later on simply educate them to make sure that they follow the rules that you want to have?
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. So we have a good mix, I would say, of people that have previous experience in investment banks like myself, or other highly regulated fintechs, but then and people that have maybe no prior experience and are not framed by these other institutions. Yeah, because the danger is, of course, if you're coming from an investment bank or even more traditional banking player, then you really, and we feel this all the time when we hire these people, you're really framed in a certain way. And it's very hard sometimes to switch the modern mindset that we are trying to live. Yeah. So here we are really careful to ensure this right mix. Of course, you need some subject matter experts to handle these complex topics. But at the same time, you need some fresh tech mindset, some fresh UX-oriented mindset that can solve these UX challenges and really serve our app-based clients in a way they like it. And that's why I think we also were able to win these three large fintechs, Revolut, Raisin, and N26, because they are exactly looking for this similar mindset of high-speed growth and at the same time uniting this with compliance. Yeah.
Maybe to briefly talk a bit broader about the fintech industry, because I think it's one of the most intriguing industries nowadays. I think if you go back in like the past 10 years, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of fintech that was then even boosted by the whole kind of blockchain topic that you guys also leveraged on initially. But I think nowadays we see a bit more kind of, I would not say skepticism, but at least there is a kind of realization, okay, we might have to do consolidation, profit margins might be lower than some have initially expected. That's why I see, especially with investors, some skepticism towards the industry. How do you feel that at Upfest? Do you see that the kind of mood has been changing? Is that a good thing for you guys or rather a bad thing? How would you frame that?
Yes, so I think it follows, for me, it feels like the usual hype cycle that I also saw during my capital markets days at Goldman Sachs and UBS. So, of course, initially people always get a little overexcited maybe, and we are now going back to a new normal. But in Upfest case, it's a little bit specific in my view. First of all, it's B2B, as you said, and secondly, simply the client demand proves that this type of solution is very highly needed at the moment, because this specific market that we are targeting, this securities infrastructure market, hasn't really been disrupted or even, let's say, greenfield coded for the last 10 or 20 years, it feels. Yeah? So the players in this market have eagerly waited, it seems, for fresh solutions that are based on the latest software architecture, in our case, mostly coded in Go. And therefore, we don't see any demand issues here. And also, we are making this entire market cheaper, if you like. So, of course, our infrastructure, our API, is overall more cost efficient to use. So we are, in a way, making this market more accessible and also enabling the distribution of ETFs and other, let's say, low cost products.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe then, because of course, I think, and you are actually a good example of that, at BAU, we have a lot of students that are very interested in the finance industry, that often go into the finance industry as a kind of first step in their career. And I think what you did was to go to one of the big shots, Goldman Sachs. Now, today, what would you recommend students to follow your trajectory? So to first go to kind of this big shot finance company and then maybe later on start your own? Or what would be your recommendation? If a student is interested in kind of going into the finance industry, what would be kind of your suggestion nowadays?
Very good question. So I probably would still recommend a short stint at one of the big firms. Of course, the danger is, as our former professor Witt, I think it was, always said, once you have a McKinsey or Goldman salary, the danger is that you have trouble to later establish your own business and maybe live on a lot lower initial founder salary. But to be honest, in the capital markets or finance world, as you said, the trust aspect is very important. So if you're trying to found something directly from university, this might also be a struggle. You have no idea about all these regulatory topics, about the finance industry in general, and have no trust from a previous firm. So I think, in hindsight, the stint at Goldman Sachs and also UBS was very helpful to now get the trust of our clients and also the regulators. This is, for me, still the way to go. Of course, if you have a chance by any circumstances to join a venture very early on, now there are so many fintechs that you can join that are also good names to work with, right? You don't need to start all the way in traditional investment banking. You can go right away to renowned fintechs like N26, Raisin Bank, and have this combined mindset immediately. So I don't think there's a need to go all the way to traditional finance, but I would nevertheless recommend to work in some other finance firm before you really venture out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's building the necessary kind of knowledge, but also maybe networks and credibility to then kind of start your own venture later on.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be long, right? It can be 1 or 2 years. And during those years, you can, if you're really keen on founding something yourself, you can already research it and test your ideas with your colleagues here in the Berlin fintech scene. There's a lot more choice now. I mean, back in the days when I graduated in 2007, I didn't really remember, or I don't remember having so much choice joining a big renowned fintech. The only choice if you wanted to go into finance were the big banks, really. But now you can choose from both worlds even. Yeah? You can choose from the JP Morgans, from the Raisin, Revolut. And there it's much easier. Probably put yourself in the right hub, London, Berlin, maybe Paris. And then you will also get the right ideas, hopefully.
Yeah. Great. Okay, Tobias, we always end this kind of episode with the same question. So we always ask our guest if he has specific recommendations for books or podcasts that he's listening to. Any recommendations in that respect?
Of course. So one of the books that's actually really interesting also for recent graduates, in my view, it has nothing to do with fintech, but contrary to all those Harvard book recommendations, it shows what is possible in Berlin. It's called Mach kein Quatsch, and it's written by Janosch Sadowski and Daniel Stammler, who founded Colibri Games, straight out of university, actually, in this case. And they developed a game called Idle Miner Tycoon. And the essence of the book is that they didn't get distracted. So, of course, many people try to advise you when you're founding something, especially probably when you're younger and straight out of university. And despite the lack of investor interest, they didn't get derailed and just continued their way. And they just did their thing and had one of the biggest, probably bootstrapped exits that Berlin has seen so far. And that's why I think this is a very good book or story to follow for recent graduates. What is actually possible in Berlin?
Okay, good. And it's also a story about bootstrapping, which I think is also a very important topic nowadays. Yeah.
Yes, it's obviously the complete opposite of what Upvest is probably doing. But I mean, in a sense, we also had to overcome certain hurdles because probably 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, when we were still a blockchain startup, probably nobody trusted us to get all these licenses to build this whole core banking system for securities trading. So as a founder, generally, you always have these trust issues, I would say. And this is a very nice story how they overcame it, and they have reached 150 million gamers globally from Berlin. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, great recommendation. Tobias, thanks a lot for sharing some of the insights into your company. And I think, again, it's a fascinating industry, fintech, but I think it's also nice to see a kind of B2B story in this context to make clear that it's not only about B2C. So I think that was very interesting. And of course, I hope our listeners also enjoyed this episode, and we will welcome you back to the next episode. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.